Brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This past week, the horrific account of the Roman Catholic priest Neil Hewitt from the Denver Archdiocese from years ago, the story broke wide open that he has admitted now on camera to molesting a number of young boys. And one of those boys, now a man living in Florida, Michael Smolanic, was also featured on this Nine News report here in Colorado. And so what an honor to have now back on the show, Michael Smolanic. Michael, welcome back to Bob and Yart Live.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is broken open, Michael, undoubtedly, because you had the courage to speak out. Because until then, we had spent about 15 years on the air, and the most direct testimony we had was a handwritten letter by another victim, Stuart Saki, that he wrote before he later then committed suicide, a letter to Neil Hewitt describing the sexual assault in horrific detail. But Michael, when you went public, things changed significantly. Can we talk about that? First of all, the change. What do you think is happening since the Nine News report?
Well, I mean, I think basically people understand really what this man did. And it's probably, there's a lot of victims out there, I believe. I know there's friends of mine that I went to grade school that prefer not to talk to me, I think, because the pain that they probably feel, their support from the community. I've heard from a lot of friends, from family, in review. I mean, I never told my family for over 50 years, but now pretty much all of my family knows with the public disclosure. So,
yes.
I'm glad that it's out there, and I hope that it promotes healing for people too.
Sure.
For me personally, it's a sense of relief because I've accepted the guilt of what he did to me, and I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
I've been carrying that guilt for quite a few years, and I never did anything wrong in this situation.
Michael, that is a. It's just the human condition, and for a child to have an adult that is respected and fun to be with, and then that adult mistreats the child, and somehow the child would rather blame himself than the adult, and that sets up a lifelong conflict that, if not eventually resolved, could lead to real destruction, like with Stuart, who eventually committed suicide after having been repeatedly molested by Neil Hewitt and plied with alcohol and introduced to pornography. And then he's an alcoholic his whole life. So great tragedies, and a lot of young men molested by homosexual priests, a lot of them have blamed themselves. And so, you know, with you, it's not just the theory, right? This was your life.
Yeah. It's really tough to come to grips with that. And pretty much I protected him, too, by never, ever saying anything because of that guilt and that shame. So, and that's not right either, you know, from that standpoint.
Yeah, it's happened also with Boy Scouts who were molested by scout leaders, and then they went on to keep silent, and those scout leaders were able to molest many other boys. So likewise with priests, the kids end up scared to death to say anything and guilt-ridden, And that's part of what the predator realizes somehow. They have this insight into the human psyche, and they exploit that. And so we're here now where we are hearing from others who are hesitant to speak publicly, I think like you just suggested, but who are reaching out to me here at Bob Benyart Live, because we've been reporting this on the air now for 27 years. You know, every so often we revisit it so it wouldn't just die and be forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time, Michael, was in 2002.
Yeah.
And since then, every few years, we would revisit the topic. But really, it was when you spoke publicly, I think that got the attention of the media. And now in Colorado, the attorney general is investigating all accusations of priest molestation since 1950. So we're going back 70 years.
Yeah.
And Neil Hewitt, we think, you know, we have identified on our website a list of Leadville, Colorado victims, Denver area victims, Aurora. Your name is there.
Yeah.
And other suspected Leadville and suspected Denver victims. And for some of them, we put pseudonyms or give initials, you know, that kind of thing. And then quite a list of witnesses also up in the mountains and down here in the Denver area. But there are others we haven't added to the list yet, you know, because of their request for anonymity, privacy, for now and maybe forever. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough thing to actually, for it to be out there and to carry. I mean, and especially with people who are in a work environment it's not the most comfortable thing to talk about or anything, and
sure.
Let alone, you know, be able to deal with, you know, other people who don't understand it, mm-hmm. you know. So I can understand, but I hope that people who need healing reach out for the healing and not just be quiet on what they do. And I do hope they do and go to the attorney general and speak, you know, because there's a website you can go to. You can call them. You send them an email. You can report to them exactly what happened, and then that will help with their investigation to really make this a thorough investigation. So I hope they'll go that far if they're not going to publicly disclose it.
Sure. And you have spoken to the attorney general's investigators, have you, so far?
Yes. Yeah. I the first time that I heard about it, it was near the end of the interviews. I did a number of interviews with the Channel 9. I mean, that's a span of probably about 15 months, because my interview with you was in October of 2017,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that's when I started talking to Kevin.
Kevin Vaughn of 9 News.
Kevin Vaughn of 9 News. And, you know, I think we did 3 or 4 different interviews that he filmed, and, I mean, a number of phone conversations. So that's been in process for a while.
And then when Kevin went down to Arizona and knocked on Neil Hewitt's front door, of course, you had already spoken to Hewitt. He left the priesthood decades ago.
Yes.
You had spoken to him. I'd like to ask you a bit about that. I know that that has been reported. But when Neil Hewitt on video admitted to molesting these boys, and two we know of by name because you had talked to him and Kevin asked Hewitt about you, and then also Stewart and Stewart's letter that he admits he saw years ago back around when we did our first program, it was mailed to him, a copy of that letter. And so of the he admitted to molesting. He didn't go into detail, but 8, maybe 9 boys.
Yes.
And on our website for the last couple years, we've had our list of known victims, known based on our own assessment, and likely victims, and it was 6 known and 3 likely.
Correct.
And now, hearing from others, we think the number may be higher, that sadly it wouldn't be shocking if it were higher.
Yeah. Well, professionals that I've talked to, they said, you know, if somebody like him would admit, a lot of times you got to double the number.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, that was
yeah.
Somebody who works in that arena.
Right.
You know, so, and to me, just knowing the different opportunities that were available, from Camp St. Malo, the camping trips we did, to the trips to, you know, Sterling, to Fort Collins. I mean, there was plenty of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. Getting back to the phone call about
yeah.
Hewitt.
Yes.
You had asked, when I did call him, I think the thing that I wasn't ready for is that I didn't realize that I would probably revert to that moment back in time when he was the adult and I was the kid.
Wow.
Even though, you know, 50 years had passed.
Yeah.
It was strange that still I gave him way more respect than I think he deserved over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm civil and everything with him, you know, and it's not that I wouldn't be civil, but I think I would have asked harder questions and asked more questions. The more I think about that is more questions, and the more he answers it, I just want to know more.
Mm.
And, but it threw me off guard in the standpoint that he admitted it so quickly.
Right. Right,
and,
which is not the norm. That's not the norm.
Because I thought he would deny it, and we would argue,
right,
and everything. I mean, in my mind, I kind of set that up, and mm-hmm. and so I kind of went through scenarios of, you know, what's going to happen. But I didn't. One scenario, I didn't realize that I was going to revert to being a kid and hold him in the esteem that I once did, and I had a hard time breaking out of that.
Sure.
So I didn't ask as many questions, but he did admit immediately that he had done that and everything. And another professional that I talked to about that, you know, he's very experienced with dealing with this. It's probably not the, you know, I mean, he's very experienced in grooming and everything, and I think he's experienced in problem resolution with this type of situation.
Mm.
I don't, and I think that he worked that to his advantage to make me feel sorry for him, I believe.
Mm.
And with me not being in a better frame of mind to
challenge more.
To challenge, yeah, and actually to stand up to anything that he said. I think, you know, the opportunity to get some of the questions, you know, went away when that happened.
Well, so, but this is not over, right? And one possible benefit to you not grilling him harshly immediately is that he didn't shut down.
Yes.
And what happened on camera with Kevin Vaughn seemed, to me, it seemed like a stunning development for him to admit that he had molested you and Stuart and others, and for him to break down in tears. It seemed to me that there was some real sorrow there, real contrition. You know, I don't know his soul, but that was so different than when, with family members, we had gone to the Archdiocese, and they treated family members who were asking basic questions.
Yeah,
they treated them not as people they were concerned about and loved and wanted to help. They treated them as though they were sizing up their risk management. Their attorneys were trying to figure out, you know, is there a lawsuit here? And that was it. When the when the Denver Archdiocese did their ads, and they're still saying this, you know, come forward, we want to help with the healing process. It actually makes me a bit sick to hear them say, we want to help with the healing process, when I know all that has meant for years is you're going to talk to their attorneys, and they're going to do everything they can to minimize and make you think what you're saying is insignificant.
You talked to them.
How did that go when you talked to the Archdiocese?
Well, it was very interesting because it was a very cold room to do it in. It was like, it was set up like with tables in a rectangle, and I was clear across the room. To my left, down on the end of the tables, were two lawyers. One was a lawyer in canon law, and another was, I don't know, church law. I don't know. There's two different types of lawyers. And then there were people that were on the board. The father was in there. I'm sorry, I don't recall his name.
There was a priest there.
The priest was there. And, you know, a number of the people, there's a Boulder lawyer who was formerly a district attorney who worked on these cases. So it was somebody from Arapahoe County that had worked on similar cases. And then, Dr. James Langley, who is kind of like, the interface for the church for people like me. Like he was my initial contact, and I dealt with him quite a bit. And, so, but that meeting, it was, the room was very cold, and I didn't know what to expect, and I prepared something to say, but I also went through my history. I brought my old report cards. I brought pictures of my parents, pictures of right before this happened to me, because during that summer before that happened, I won an award, and they took a picture of me. It was some kind of poster design thing, and I was in the local paper, and that was in June, and this had happened in August with Father. So I had shared, I had shared exactly what had happened to me. Then my prepared state was more that, you know, I feel fortunate because I came from a very loving family. I have really been blessed with really nice brothers and sisters.
Wow.
And really, really wonderful parents, and without that, they supported me in a way that they didn't know they were.
Sure,
you know, in
of
that
course.
They helped me feel that I could do whatever I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
and it took away a lot of the, you know, the pain of what I was processing, and I got lost in work, in doing my creative projects that I did.
So, Michael, of course, your family's love helped heal wounds that they didn't know were there.
Yep, but, absolutely.
But back to the Archdiocese, so the room, what was the demeanor of the group like toward what you were sharing with them?
They were very quiet and very open. You know, every once in a while they would ask a question in response to something that I said to clarify. But then, you know, at the end I said, I wasn't too sure if they believed me or anything, because I mean, there was this quietness about it. And, so, you know, I'd ask them, and they said, "Oh no, we believe you. We understand." People on the board spoke and said that they were sorry that with what transpired and everything. And in that meeting, I did ask questions. You know, the focus was to be on healing. The and some of my questions about for me to heal was, you know, did you guys know about this?
Right.
Was this something that you knew about it and it was just tolerated or whatever?
Right.
And it's like, because I feel like, you know, from the things that I understand at that time, that there's probably a lot more people out there. What I realize now, there are people,
of course, right,
a lot more people out there because
and
I've
from other priests, not only
yes.
Neil Hewitt, but from others, Donna Ballantyne, who you know, Stuart Saki's
yes.
Cousin and very involved. And if it wasn't for Donna, much of this perhaps may never have been exposed.
Yeah.
But Donna is. You know, we're talking through the case of another priest we haven't named on the air who there was an accusation against, and it's a virtual certainty that he molested children, and the diocese dismissed it, ignored it. But with Neil Hewitt, they said, you asked them if they knew this. How did they respond?
They said, we can't... We can't divulge anything from that, you know, of what we knew or what we didn't know and what the records are because those records are private.
Yeah, so in other words, they're liars. They are liars. And if, in fact, the Denver Archdiocese knew that a priest, there was accusations that a priest was molesting children, and they moved him to another parish where he could continue being a predator on these unsuspecting families and boys, then they are fully culpable. And when they say we can't release that, there's privacy matters, they are lying. That's a lie. And that's the kind of stonewalling that shows that they're not sorry and they're not looking for healing. They're looking, this is risk management, something that attorneys do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that representatives of Jesus Christ would do. It's something that attorneys do. And tragically, many, not only the Roman Catholic Church, but many mainline denominations have become far more like businesses than they are ministries.
Yeah. That's a sad.
Yeah.
Sad reality, I think.
Yeah. So they told you they couldn't even answer the question, which was
no.
a lie that they couldn't answer the question.
And I did press it, you know, and I, you know, more, you know, this is part of my healing and, you know, because that was the focus of the thing, letting me share and then them, those were some of the things to help me heal, but I didn't get any of that. And, you know, perhaps the new investigation with the Attorney General will bring more of this to light because there's got to be something there that's been brought to light.
Well, I'm sure you have heard in the news the past few days, Michael, we're speaking to Michael Smolanic, one of our heroes here at Bob and Yurt Live, for speaking publicly about this priest, Neil Hewitt, former priest who molested so many children while working for the Denver Archdiocese. You probably have heard that California is looking to pass a law removing this seal of secrecy in the Catholic confessional. When a priest admits
wow.
to molesting boys, that needs to be reported. Have you heard about that?
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that's wow. in the news right now, and it's tremendous. Even more needs to be done. But Neil Hewitt said to Kevin Vaughn on 9 News that he would go to confession, and he confessed to priests, plural. He said, priest, plural. And their response was, and they asked you about it, and what a mockery when they said to him, well, your penance, say like 3 Our Fathers and 3 Hail Marys and have a good day. So that's his account, but his account of that seems to be consistent with the epidemic of priests molesting boys in the Catholic Church. And so in reality, official representatives of the archdiocese who were responsible for the welfare of their flock, they did have reports of Neil Hewitt molesting boys, and those reports came from Neil Hewitt himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had reports. And I think, and Michael, I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, right? We this is what we do full time in my life at church and here on the radio. I think that when all the parties stand before Jesus Christ on Judgment Day, that cloak of the confessional will mean nothing. Nothing. When someone says, I kidnapped a child, I raped a woman, I molested a boy, and that priest keeps that secret, I think on Judgment Day, that priest will realize he has been an accomplice after the fact, and that kind of behavior has led to even more harm against children and other victims.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
It's terrible. I mean, it really is. You think about it. I mean, it just.
Yeah. Yeah, it is horrific. And in the Bible, Michael, when people sinned, and I'm talking about the patriarchs of the faith, and even prophets, and even the kings, and even the apostles, when they sinned, God didn't sweep it under the rug. He didn't put it in a dark confessional.
Right.
You know, he exposed it, and it ended up on the pages of the Bible.
Right. Right.
And so that is the exact opposite of that's how God deals with sin, including by religious leaders, the exact opposite of how the Roman Catholic Church has dealt with sin. Yeah. I was an altar boy for years, by the way. You remind me about your early years with the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I was an altar boy. I went to Mass every day before I went to school. I went to communion. And then we had a little piece of toast that we would eat in the school basement before I went to class, you know, right after Mass. So we went to Mass all the time. We prayed the rosary like a million, you know, weekly,
right,
and everything. Just
we
were very devout about our faith.
Michael, I'm sorry that we're about out of time. I have a quick question. Yeah. In the reporting, it was stated that the Catholic Church here in Denver has set up a framework from which to compensate victims. It seems to me just like their offer to help with healing is inadequate, this framework is probably going to be grossly inadequate. Do you know if there's any class action effort or any lawsuits that are forming against the Denver Archdiocese?
No, I don't know about that, but I kind of looked into different things, and I did ask the Attorney General about, you know, what, you know, more details on that, and I just got an overview that these people were going to disperse that or something like that.
Yeah.
I've read stories of other situations where...
Well, Michael, we're out of time. Could you and I talk off the air? I'll be with you in one moment, all right? This is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.